Main item consists of a Repco ST7 carriage. You can see.
Behind the
right. Yes, yes.
For reproduction, AKT P10 pickup system is used, which is selected with respect to channel symmetry and low compliance. The low compliance, together with a short toner, increases the pickup resonance frequency to such a degree that cylinders running off the center strongly can be tracked too. It also guarantees exact groove contact with fixed height. The vertical adjustment of the toner to track the different cylinder sizes is achieved by means of putting spacing blocks under the tone down drive.
Yes.
I'm dreadfully crude.
Yeah.
So it's in the hole.
Yes, yes.
Practical experience has confirmed that the theory that the cylinder has to be suspended at both ends concerning non-concentric cylinders, sound quality is much better, is improved in comparison to the traditional suspension employing the Edison standard mandrel. Thank you very much.
Another view in there.
Yes, there's another view, yes.
Is there a taper component on the left side there? Is that what you're using to the end of the
cylinder? It moves from the right hand side to the left side.
And then you just kind of take it.
Yes, yes.
Screw it into a good fit.
Yes. Yes. And the
jaw's feet out.
Yes, yes, yes. And this is that was the hardest workmanship. It was not easy to manufacture because of the radial arrow. You had to do the work at once for the whole three jaw system.
Do you have a picture of that?
No, no, but I can explain how it works. You have two slices, one with a yes, like a with radial slots and with circular slots in 120 degree space, yes. And this had been matched to be matched very very closely.
Is that a long process?
But
is that a long process?
No, no. The adjustment is no process. The process was to manufacture this, because if it's not manufactured from the same person. You cannot match the two parts that you have little error, because it has to be manufactured at the same machine.
Could I ask one question? When you want to squeeze the outside of the cylinder,
yes.
Isn't that by pulling out the cone that we can see on the shaft? When you pull out the cone, is the,
yes.
The jaws then go together?
No,
out,
no,
is it from inside out or outside in?
It's from inside out.
Oh.
Yes.
Do you have a means of adjusting the pressure so that you don't overdo it?
No, no, don't have.
Is it possible to run in the reverse direction so you can use the arm?
Yes, of course. You can do it.
Yeah.
But you have to turn I must make some modification on the rack for driving. Yes.
You could turn the slider on.
You can't reverse the motor.
Yes. That's no problem because it's DC power.
For those of us who have access to Frame's precision machinist, how free are you being with the plan screws? How free are you allowed to do?
Yes.
$1,000?
No. The prototype is not very cheap. Was not very cheap. But I think the further models are in the range of 1,500
pounds or shillings?
How many shillings?
How many shillings? $1,500, yes?
No, how many shillings, Bruce?
How many shillings? 25,000.
$1,500.
$1,500.
$1,500. I think it's the minimum, but $1,500 to $2,000. I think it's yes.
Is it possible to get? What I meant was, is it possible to get plans of this machine?
Oh, it's it makes one person who produces.
Yeah,
it takes a long time.
Yes, I understand.
What he wants is the plans so that he can get it made.
Could be, yes. If you are interested in, then give me your card and...
Okay.
Yes. But I think you have to modify, use another arm because we have no chance to get... the Repco SD7 in Europe. Perhaps you have here. You can. It depends not on the arm and don't arm system. You can use another one like the Revox or other tangential don't arms. I think there exist in USA some products.
We have no problem.
Okay.
You know, if you play those cylinders backwards, there's hidden messages. Our next speakers are from the Library of Congress, which we're all familiar with, hopefully. Mr. Jerry Gibson and Sam Berlowski. Jerry Gibson's official title is Curator of the Motion Picture.
You want me to say it for you?
Say it for me, yeah.
Motion.
They love titles, it's so long, I can't remember.
Well, that way
lots of
time. We take up lots of time that way. Motion picture broadcast and recorded staff.
He's been involved with the technical panel for several years now, and gave a paper last year on the point at where they were last year on CDs. And I'll just turn it over to Jerry.
So I don't get a crick in my back. Do I just click this one? Olive, I'm going to briefly review for some of you who weren't. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah.
I'll briefly review for you very quickly some of the things I mentioned last year. I won't take much time with them, but just let you know what we're doing with them. But as far as the CD, compressed audio project, et cetera, is concerned, I'm going to ask Sam Berlowski specifically to speak to it. I mentioned last year that we had not too long before become aware that cellulose cylinders are in fact nitric cellulose, and those of you who know anything about nitric cellulose, and there was some reference to it yesterday, are aware of some of the problems it presents. I have a verbal report from the preservation testing office at the library that in fact, as I had knew a year ago or 10 months ago now, they are nitric cellulose, of course. But due to some reasons which we haven't been able to technically determine, a apparently cylinders do not have the flamboyance of deterioration that nitric cellulose based motion picture film does. We have some guesses about it, but at least thus far on a verbal report from preservation, we have not put our cellulose cylinders into refrigeration bowls, as we do have our nitric cellulose film. I hopefully will have a formal report, and John Francis. Anyway, John, I still haven't forgotten about it. I will try. Secondly, we are continuing, well, I mentioned last year, the prototype of a new polypropylene ammonium oxide fire retardant paint box, which we had just completed designing with a company called Plastic Real Corporation of America. We are finally into fully using them, and with some slight modifications to make the lid fit a little tighter, we find the boxes very successful. We're completing working with some manufacturers and labeling people to make sure that we have an archival quality label where the glue hopefully doesn't dry out, the paper doesn't heat itself up, and ink doesn't fade. So we're trying to come up with a label that will adhere to the polypropylene container, and we don't have to come back in 5 years or 50 years or whatever and figure out what the hell is on the tape, assuming the tape lasts that long. We're in the midst right now of ongoing tests of commercially available inner records liner sleeves, of trying to find which ones Preservation Office will quite honestly allow us to buy from the standpoint of being least harmful or in fact most protective of vinyl records and shellac records, and also of lacquer acetate, but primarily vinyl and shellac at the moment. They are ongoing. We have also, we're completing tests, it sounds like we're completing more than we're doing anything, I guess. We're completing tests on analysis of the commercial cleaning products on the market for primarily cleaning LPs and what are the chemical compounds that are in them that might have direct chemical interaction that's going to. It may sound great today, but what's in the sleeve tomorrow when you take the record out type of thing. I think it would be more interesting, at least to me, to find out what's going on at LC, to ask Sam to continue, and then after he's told you about the compressed audio project, then to handle any questions we can try to handle.
Yeah, maybe I will sit down if I can. Is this on? Yeah.
Sam Brolowski. For those okay. Who haven't, he's still retiring. It's Sam Brolowski, who's the senior audio reference librarian at the library.
I wanted to give you a report on the cylinders in Bob Carneal's car. We didn't learn what they were doing, but we understand his car has been broken into 5 times now because everybody thinks, I said cylinders, everyone thinks he has a CD player in his car because he keeps those CDs on his back seat getting hot.
The cylinders too.
That's right. The cylinder problem though goes hand in hand with the acute space shortages that we're facing. So we're going to disperse those cylinders around and see if we can take care of the space problem that way. I'm here to tell you about a new project the library is undertaking. We started it in the fall of last year. It's a natural to talk about in the technology session, but I'm afraid I'm not the one to tell you too much about the technological aspects about it, but perhaps some of my colleagues here can. The library, as you may know, is very interested in optical disc technology, and in 1981 or two started a multifaceted optical disc experiment in producing, putting films on optical video discs, motion picture stills on optical discs, prints and photographs, lithographs. We produced 2 CDs and so forth. In the fall, Bob Carneal got me interested in undertaking a project of producing a compressed audio disc at the library. That is, we've all seen the little New Yorker cartoon of the little tiny building that says the Library of Congress on microfiche. And Sony's been talking that way for 20 years, as soon as we started to hear about digital technology. So we all were enchanted and interested in the aspects of putting a lot of material onto a small disk or small amount of space. So what we've started is a compressed audio disk, which is actually a video disk, much like the LaserRed video disks that you can buy or rent, which is encoded only in audio, with audio. They call it compressed for several reasons. It's got a, actually, because it's a video technology, and they're putting audio on it, there's several limitations. And the two major limitations from the playback or technological standpoint are a very low frequency range, in which case it was originally thought to be 5,000 cycles. We now believe it's going to be 6,000 cycles. And even more severe is the aspect that it's read by a laser into a computer, into computer buffers, and two buffers alternate playing back the sound from this video disc to you. And when the two buffers alternate, there's a gap. And part of this experiment is to see how much the gap is going to be. If you can fill the amount of space in each frame to its greatest capacity, the gap is shorter, hopefully as small as a tenth of a second. Now, we'll see. On the other hand, it's been 6 months since we started this, and in the 6 months, technology's moved ahead, and we're probably very hard at work now on a dinosaur. But we think that the work that we're doing and the result we get will enable us to deal better with more sophisticated technologies to come. The library, and mostly Bob Carneal, it's mostly being done within our division, presented me with an honor or onus of choosing the material to go on this disk. However, we had to meet certain requirements of the optical disk program at the library. A major requirement was that we use complete collections. The library did not want greatest hits of anything on any of their optical disc programs, and this has been true. We, in the motion picture part of our division, I think we put our complete motion picture still collection on two discs. So we weren't allowed to go through and pick the best of the radio, the best of this and that. Also, remember that I had the inherent disadvantages of a low frequency range and this gap, and that made it so that we had to use spoken recordings. So with all of those limitations, we decided to see if we could gather every spoken recording on disc that we had that was produced prior to 1910 to put on this optical video disc, which will be, of course, all audio. I think the disc is only a 8-inch disc, so it could be longer. It's going to be 33 hours. So what we wanted to do was to have 33 hours of recording that represented every spoken word recording we had, not recorded on the disc chronologically, but at least I sort of guessed that maybe we had 33 hours of material that predated 1910. And I'll tell you a little about what I came up with. The selection of the recordings was, on one hand easy, on the other hand hard. We had to just go through all the Victor Columbia catalogs. We had to go through our collections. We looked at our Rigler Deutsch film. Elwood McKee came in to help us. Steve Simoleon helped us. It took several months to gather the material. We started with the Victors, and I think we have 15 hours of Victors, and then did miscellaneous labels, then Columbias, and then more miscellaneous things that we had gathered. So what's on the disc? Well, you all can imagine. Descriptive specialties, as they were called. Uncle Josh. Dramatic recitations. Uncle Josh. political addresses. We had almost all of the Taft. and Brian recordings, minstrel recordings, vaudeville recordings, and of course a lot of ethnic humor. We included a lot of music on it, including, say, a few Harry Lauder recordings, when the music was interrupted by a spoken word. We also just put some music on it just to see how it would sound with the gaps. We included some alternate takes, but not all of the alternate takes we had. We put in alternate takes when we knew that some of the earlier takes we had were not as good. We included, of course, the alternate takes of the Uncle Josh and Society record, which has the very early reference use of the word jazz. You may remember the movie that came out in the mid-60s of Evelyn Waugh's The Loved One, which the Hollywood PR people touted as the movie was something to offend everyone. I think this disc will be advertised the same way. There's no ethnic group left untouched, and no humor too bad for this recording. But what we feel it's going to be a great service. It'll be in the reading room. It'll be available. I'll talk a little bit about how it'll be accessible to people. But I think that, and I think you'll agree, deservedly or not, this is a pretty neglected phase of sound recording history. I think there's a lot to be learned from it, personally. I think there's a very interesting transition period between the minstrels and vaudeville into forms of 20th century entertainment that became so by the end of the teens that we still have today, musical theater and review sketches and things. I think that the Shakespeare recordings on it are going to be of interest to people. I think the other dramatic recitations, the examples of 19th century oratory, for instance, are going to be of interest to people. I think one advantage of picking all of this material, of taking a general scheme like all pre-1910 discs, was to have a lot of different kinds of material. We have an enormous poetry archive at the library that we could have just picked, but I just didn't feel that many people were going to come in. You know, we wouldn't get different kinds of people to come in and listen to the poetry readings. So, and I hope with this we're going to get the general public and the scholarly public. The cataloging on it is all being done online. It's something I hesitate to call it cataloging, indexing. It's not full cataloging, but there'll be subject and genre access. We'll have online access to subjects when appropriate, to all genres. We'll identify each disc with a genre. That's what I'm grappling with now, because the library's never agreed upon established, you know, genres and categories for these recordings. We'll also we'll have indications online of the physical descriptions and even the technical quality, and may even for public use screen out some of the ones that just really sound awful that we decided to record anyway, just because of the in order to be complete. That is, records which were so worn. I made some interesting observations on Jim Walsh's taste in recordings, by which ones were the most worn, and then I won't go into that. The cataloging is done on DBase 3. I don't know how many of you use DBase 3. You know its advantages and its disadvantages. Disadvantages mainly being the fixed fields, so that the longest title field is the length of the field for every title of every disc in this. The cataloging emulates LC Mark cataloging in the order of the fields and the kind of information we're putting in, but of course it won't be as detailed or authoritative as Mark cataloging. So it'll be somewhere between Rigler and Deutsch indexing and Mark cataloging, but it will have the subject genre access. We hope through the DBase and the programming capabilities, and the DBase was the whole disk is the producer of the disc, the video engineering firm, mastering firm, is using DBase. I think they started out with RBase 5000, but went on to DBase. So the playback will be through a DBase process. So we're going to make up little programs of samplings. You could get a sampling of the minstrel recordings, minstrel A, B, C, D, E, F, or a sampling of different kinds of recordings of a certain genre, or just a whole overview of the series. I said everything was pre-1910. There are a few exceptions. I got to 28 hours in the 1910 category and then had about 5 or 6 hours left. So we put every Nations Forum disc we have on this. And that has a double advantage. It hopefully will counteract a little of the criticism we'll get for all the, you know, terrible humor on it, because this is all, you know, very important political, or at least political addresses by important people. We have a lot of the A.F.R. Lawrence alternate takes from the Nation's Forum collection. All of that will be on this disc too. Also, and best news of all, the Nation's Forum, to the best of my knowledge, and I don't want to hear differently, is in the public domain. And yeah, I know, but every time we say it, you know, we're always afraid someone's going to jump up and say, I'm Irving Golterman, and and you owe me $100,000. And so that's true. Well, the Golterman family has said that they don't have rights, and Columbia said they don't have rights, so we, you know, that's about the best we can do. That's good enough for us, almost. So I said I was filling it up with Nation's Forum, and then also some of the, I wanted to show a little bit of the evolution of humor and recordings into the teens. So we have a few early teens, like Frank Burbeck and some more of the Shakespeare recordings. The reason we didn't put cylinders on it is mostly because of the amount of engineering it would take. We would have had to record all of our cylinders. It would have been a great deal of difficulties for us. And we were under... One reason we undertook this is that at the time that the project time we commenced in the fall, the video mastering market was very soft. I think CD-ROM has sort of alleviated that, and our firm is very anxious to get this over with and get on to a bigger project. But the video mastering market was soft, so we could get a good deal on getting someone to do this work, and we had to get it to him fast. We didn't get it to him as fast as he wanted, because we really wanted to make sure we didn't miss any discs, which I'm sure we did, of course, but we did the best we could. Now the firm that we hired is trying to sell us on a 400-hour CD-ROM audio disc, so we can get all those Uncle Josh cylinders too, if they don't. Yeah. I don't know what else. We have about 56 Berliner spoken recordings on it. I told you Columbia. We have a little foreign stuff. We have a lot of the other ancillary labels, like Diamond and things like that. So that and American. So that's what we're doing, and I'd be happy to hear your comments or questions. And